Hey, what's going on, everyone? Welcome to the Over the Cap podcast. It's Jason Fitzgerald here. You can find me on Twitter at Jason_OTC. And it is January 31st, 2021. We're doing a special Sunday edition here. Bogged down once again with just a lot of stuff. So actually, I was almost going to punt on the podcast this week. I was going to do maybe a little something on franchise tags. If I didn't get to one early in the week, then hold it off for next week and just go through some Twitter questions that I have been getting. But with the big trade stuff, I figured I would jump in and do one. Just first of all, congratulations to all the people that took part in the Tulane Pro Football negotiation competition. They did a great job running it, had to be run over Zoom. That's a pretty difficult thing to do. There weren't too many technical hangups, so it wasn't too, you know, it wasn't too bad in that manner. You know, you missed the chance to interact with people in person, but it was a good event, and I was glad to be able to take part in that. So congratulations to all the teams that took part and did pretty well, and hopefully next year, if you can come back again, that the event will be in New Orleans. I have some stuff that I'm working on that hopefully I'll have done. My target was originally the Super Bowl. I don't think it's going to be done by then, so I'm going to guess the week after that. It'll be something for the premium subscribers that will get out there. I'll get more information on that next week as I get a little bit further along, but hopefully I'll be able to do a podcast next week as well. But I think just for today, I won't even bother doing the Twitter Q&A kind of stuff that I usually do. We're just going to go over the trades and then just a couple of the other of the trade rumor stuff that's kind of out there. But we talked about it before. Matthew Stafford was on the trade block, and we figured that deal would probably happen pretty quickly, and it did. They make a pretty stunning trade with the Los Angeles Rams, in which they do get their two first-round picks. That was what I assume Stafford would always kind of bring. But beyond the two first-round picks, they're also going to get Jared Goff coming back, and that kind of threw me a little bit sideways on there. I wasn't really sure the logic of that one and as to why they decided that they wanted him in that package. So, you know, there's two ways to look at the trade, but I think the easiest one, first of all, is to look at the Rams side. I think that's less complex than looking at it from the Lions' point of view. So if we look at it from the Rams' point of view, what were their two options? Their two options were basically to keep Jared Goff or to bring on Matthew Stafford. And here's the thing. I think the Rams had to realize at this point that they had reached probably their peak that they could go to with Goff. They were going to be every year a 9-win, 10-win kind of team. You know, that was pretty much going to be their ceiling. Maybe there was a little bit of a lower floor if you wanted to say that they could go down to 7 wins or something like that. I think between the coaching staff and the defense and everything else there, I don't know if they really would have gone much below that, but I mean, anything is possible. But I think they realized that was their peak. Their peak was basically to be a second round out in the playoffs. That's kind of your peak performance, barring like a miracle season. And everybody has those, you know, Case Keenum in a championship game, the Chargers years ago making the Super Bowl. You do get some miracle seasons here and there, and it's always possible that could have happened as well. But I think realistically, when you take a look at this, you say to yourself, we've got to get better. We've got to take risks to get better. And there are a few organizations, I think, that take more risks than the Los Angeles Rams. I think this is the way that they do business now. This is the way that they've looked to build a team. They haven't had a first-round draft pick since they picked Goff in 2016. All right, they're constantly churning their first-round picks at this point. You know, 2017, they traded away their pick. I think that was part of the Goff trade. 2018, I think, was the Brandon Cooks trade. 2019 was a trade down. 2020 was Jalen Ramsey. I believe that's the order of picks that we're at right now. And 2021 is also going to be Jalen Ramsey. And now in 2022 and 2023, it's going to be Matthew Stafford. So they've basically decided they're going to punt on first-round picks to bring in proven talent in most cases. You know, some of it, again, was to jump up or drop back down. And I think what you see from the Rams here is they're valuing the known over the unknown. And I think they're valuing the fact that the college system, I don't know this necessarily for a fact, but even in some of the draft studies that Brad and I did, where we've looked at it, the difference between those picks that are in the bottom half of the first round and the picks that are in the second round sometimes really isn't that great. There's actually been more success probably in some of those second round picks than there are in the back end of the first round. you know, obviously you'd still rather have a first round pick because you have access to more players, more talent. But I think with the way the college pool is going, I think more and more teams are starting to value the concept of not necessarily going for the super pick, unless it's like top 5, 6, 7, 8 players maybe in a draft, and specifically if you need a quarterback. You know, that's really important to be in there. But for everywhere else, I almost think that the importance is being on how many picks can you get in the top 50, in the top 75, in the top 100. And I think that's kind of what the Rams have done a little bit here of. They're also pretty active in trading away their own players. They're great at trading away bad contracts. Like, I dislike the Ogletree contract they did. They pawned it off on somebody. You get a draft pick back. The Brandon Cooks contract wasn't great. Got a draft pick back. Jared Goff, not great. They get a quarterback back as part of that deal. I shouldn't say that about the Goff deal. The Goff deal, there was really no problem with the Goff deal. That's not fair to say the deal wasn't great. But they're willing to move pieces around, I think, to maximize where they're going to try to build their team now is going to be around these older stars, and they're going to try to fill them in with second and third round draft picks would be my guess as to what they're going to look for in the future on this. Had they kept Goff on the team, just real quick, jotted these numbers down, it would have cost them $76.5 million over the next 3 years. That was going to be $34.95 million on the cap this year, $32.95 million on the cap in 2022, and we're assuming that they're going to cut him in 2023. That's when the guarantees run out. That's when it's easy to cut him, and he would have cost, I think it was $8.6 million on the cap. Actually, I might be wrong. Let me double-check that number real quick because that number sounds light. I think I had a pre-June, post-June 1 maybe in there. Let's see. Pre-June 1. No, 8.6. Okay. Yeah, no, that's correct. So, you know, so the Rams basically go from $76.5 million over 3 years for him, and then they jump into Stafford instead, who's going to cost him 20 and 23, $46 million over two. So, in essence, over this three-year period, they're going to have an extra $11.3 million in cap space to work with by being able to do this trade. And obviously, they think they're getting a much better quarterback. You can argue on the Stafford thing. I'll talk about Stafford himself in a little bit. Everybody knows I'm not a big Stafford guy. I'm not completely negative on him, but I'm not a big Stafford guy at all. But that's the gist of it here. They're going to gain $11.3 million in cap space by getting Jared Goff off the books. There's no way that the Rams can make this trade without including Jared Goff in the trade. There's just no way that they can do it, because even if you want to factor in a three-team trade, remember, you can't actually process these trades until the start of the new league year, which means you can't process it until March 17th. You would have to put faith that you're going to actually have another team that's going to agree to trade for Jared Goff and not back out or anything like that. It's too many moving parts. He really needed to be included in this for them to make it work. And so that's maybe part of why Detroit got in the mix here to get this deal done. But from the Rams' perspective, you know, I'm sure this is what they're looking at. They're looking at saying, this gives us an immediate chance now. We have a team that we think we can win with now. And this is our concern. Our concern isn't 2 years from now. Our concern isn't 3 years from now. You know what? If this doesn't work out, we're going to get a draft pick by 2024, I guess it is, to turn the team around. You know, that's basically the way that this will run for them. For the Rams, this is a must-win, though, situation. The Rams have to get better now, and they have to get better really the next year as well. You know, they'll be able to franchise tag Stafford. I don't think he has a no tag provision, if I remember correctly. So, I mean, they can do that, and they can extend him as well. I would imagine that they'll probably look at extension talks next year if he has a good season. This also gives them, you know, a lot of people have brought up the point, I know Andrew Brandt did, that, you know, how much money that they're going to have on the cap for their quarterbacks this year, because you're going to have $22.2 million in dead money for Jared Goff, and you're going to have another $20 million on the salary cap with Matt Stafford. So you're paying all this money for the quarterback position. But the one thing that I will say is that the Rams were not going to touch the Jared Goff deal for cap relief. Because even if you look at what the Rams did last year, they were really smart. Unlike what the Eagles did with Wentz, the Rams only did on the restructure with Goff the amount that they needed to survive for the year. They didn't go full in. They didn't go all in. They didn't just blow it out to make it impossible to trade the guy in the future. With Wentz, they went all in on that for whatever reasons. But they went all in on that deal, which really pumped up his dead money, even if you wanted to trade him. Here, you did create cap space just by trading him. You know, there was about a $12 million or so differential between what his cap charge was going to be and what his dead money is going to be. So you left yourself open for that. They weren't going to restructure that deal to not be able to possibly have a market to trade him next season. That's absolutely the case. They weren't going to do that. So with Stafford, you can go in there now and you can take this $20 million salary and you can do whatever you want with it. Because you know Stafford is your quarterback the next 2 years. You know, barring a horrific injury, he's your quarterback. So you don't have to worry about it. You're not trading him next year. You're not doing anything like that. You're probably thinking long-term, you're going to extend him. You know, he's what, 32, 33 years old. So you can get these 2 years out of him, possibly another 2 or 3 years to have him finish out his career. So I don't think you have any issues using avoid provisions in there. You know, you can max out your savings as much as you want, and you can probably bring his cap number down to $5 million this year. So not only are you going to be in a position now to where you're saving money over the long term, but you can finagle the numbers, you can massage the numbers to put yourself in a much better salary cap position this year to re-sign some of your players, your cornerbacks and safeties who are free agents, or maybe to go into free agency and bring some people in. You have about $32 million spent on your receivers. You need a quarterback to get them to get them the ball. If you didn't believe in Jared Goff to do it, maybe this guy can do it. I almost think that they would have been better off now with Brandon Cooks being still on the team. Whereas I don't know if he meshed as well with Goff for whatever issues were going on with Jared Goff. But I think that's the logic for why they do it. Long term, is this a plan for success? I don't think so. You've got no first round picks. You've got a team that's going to be getting older. You know, when you don't have that supply of talent, and I know we've talked about second and third rounders here, but when you don't necessarily have that supply of those top talents that are coming into your team, it does make it a little more difficult sometimes to succeed. When you draft poorly, and in this case, it's just not having draft picks at all. When you do that, those results show themselves 3 years, 4 years, 5 years down the line. So if we're looking at a team that doesn't have, you know, any of these draft picks, that is kind of the way that you go from an 11-win team to an 8-win team to a 5-win team. That's the pattern that takes. So that's almost where they're at. Now, maybe they're going to do really well with these other draft picks, but that's kind of the problem when you don't draft well or you don't have draft picks at all. So that's a concern that I would have for the Rams, but again, I understand why they did it. Like that, there are some people that didn't get this move at all. And I'm stunned by that. I was stunned by how polarizing this trade was on Twitter as to people that thought the Rams completely fleeced the Lions, the amount of people that think the Lions fleeced the Rams, the amount of people that think that this is just all across the board hell, all the different, you know, things that are at play here. People calling this a pure salary dump. I mean, what? No, it's none of that. I mean, it's a legitimate trade. Is there a little bit more of a NBA-ish component to it? Yes, because you're talking about picks that are so far down the line, just like they do in the NBA. And my initial feeling on this was Goff was a salary offset, like you do in the NBA. You know, you need salaries to offset. And it was that this was not, by any stretch of the imagination, this was not, God, the Rams needed so badly to get out of this Jared Goff contract that they had to give away two picks. They brought back Matt Stafford. Matt Stafford's value around the league probably was going to be two first-round picks if they really pushed it. if the Lions really pushed it. And again, I'll talk about that in a second. Now, the risk for the Rams here, how much of a positive move is it, though, for Matthew Stafford? Matthew Stafford has not been a successful quarterback in the NFL. Matt Stafford has 3 playoff appearances in, what, a 12-year career? 6 losing seasons? Let's look them up. Let's just make sure I have the right numbers here since I'm just going by memory. Let's just look up the Lions on Pro Football Reference here. Okay, so Matt Stafford has been the quarterback of the Detroit Lions since 2009. We'll just throw out the 2009 season. I'll throw out 2010 because he was hurt. So we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years of Matt Stafford performances here. We have 1, 2, 3 playoff appearances. We have 1, 2, 3, 4 winning seasons. We don't have any seasons above 11 wins. We don't have any seasons with a playoff win. We don't have any seasons out of the wild card round. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 losing seasons. And only one of those, or 2 of those seasons, are 7-9. We have a 4-win season, a 3-win season, a 5-win season, a 6-win season. Those are not the numbers of a quarterback that is going to pull above talent level. All right? There are people, because of where Matt Stafford got drafted, that really, really, really overrate, I think, Stafford because of that. It's the same thing as the Bradford effect. All right? Maybe that's what we should call this, the Bradford effect. Sam Bradford was a quarterback that was drafted number one. For those of you who maybe are too young to really have seen Bradford steal a lot of money from the NFL. He was drafted number one in 2010. It was the last of the big money contracts of the kind of the original NFL rookie salary system. Bradford was always hurt, kind of sucked, wasn't very good, was able to get traded to Philadelphia, had a mediocre kind of season. The Eagles end up signing him for like $17 million or something like that. They immediately turn around and go and get Carson Wentz. Sam Bradford gets all annoyed, even though he had done nothing in his career. They're able to turn around and fleece the Minnesota Vikings for a first-round pick for him when the Minnesota Vikings starting quarterback goes down. Sam Bradford goes on to do nothing really in Minnesota, gets hurt once again, still ends up with like an $18 million contract in Arizona. Doesn't even finish the first year of that deal before he's cut because he can't play. He's no good. But that first round grade, that number one overall pick, and the fact that he didn't completely suck, stuck with him for a pretty long NFL career, despite doing nothing. So Stafford is a much better version of Sam Bradford. You know, it's not like Stafford's a bum, but Stafford in NFL terms is a guy. You know, he's a guy with a long career that, you know, does he have a better arm than Eli Manning had? Sure. He's got a better arm than Eli Manning had. Has it amounted to anything? No, it really hasn't. You know, the same way people killed Eli Manning at the end of Eli Manning's career, that's basically been Matt Stafford's entire career. So I think it's asking a lot to say, well, he's going to come in and he's really going to lift us. They're banking on the fact that their team, they believe, is better than any Detroit Lions team that Stafford was ever on. That's probably at least a reasonable argument. They have a better coach than the Lions ever had. Probably true. They have a better defense than the Lions ever had. Probably true. They have better offensive linemen than the Lions had. Probably true. So they do have a better team than the Lions had. But still, again, you're asking a lot to be able to get to that next level. Now, in the NFC, it's much easier than in the AFC. The AFC's got some quarterbacks that are killers, I think, in there. The NFC, not as much. I'm not saying it's a lateral move, but it's pretty close to it. If Goff could have gotten his confidence back, I think he probably could have similar performances. I think the thing with Goff is Goff lost confidence. I think there was a lot of negativity around him coming off of last season. not last season, the season before, and that carried into this year. And I think the team lost confidence in him. I think that was pretty clear with how they were going to plan on bringing the backup quarterback basically in to start in the playoffs. And I think he felt as if the organization gave up on him, which they were probably doing, that they probably were looking elsewhere. Sometimes that happens to players. And players, I think, deal with that differently. Not everybody deals with that the same. And some of the players get very bad for it, and maybe they can come back from it. And then that brings you to the Detroit Lions side of the trade. For Detroit, the $11.3 million that's gained by the Rams is lost by Detroit over the next couple of years. And that's kind of the surprising thing. You know, they're bringing in Jared Goff this year at a $28.15 million cap hit when they could have had Stafford at 33. You know, the following year, Stafford would have been 26, I think. And then it was 26.15, so about a wash there. Let's look up. And just out of just for saying something here, we are not processing these trades yet on the salary caps for these teams because it doesn't really happen until the league year starts. Now, as it gets closer to the trade deadline, I'll soften the stance on that and move the players. But I'm not going to move them ahead of time because this is so far out. There's too many things that can happen. So I probably won't move them over. And the other reason is that there may be some things that they're going to have to do with both of these contracts in order to make the numbers work for both teams, because both teams are basically over the cap, and they'd be much better off with bringing the cap numbers down to comply with the salary cap. The thing is, these guys have to be on the roster at 4 p.m. on the first day of trades. So I believe they have to count towards the salary cap number that they have to be under when the new league year starts. If I'm wrong on that, then maybe I'm wrong. But if not, I wouldn't be surprised if what they do is they guarantee roster bonuses for both of these players, which will cause it to something to prorate on there. It depends on how the cap issues work with it. And I'm not 100% sure because I've seen it kind of different ways when it comes with that. But there may be some things that they can do that won't impact their dead money this year, or at least not too significantly, but maybe can be something for how they're going to go over. Or, I mean, I guess the other possibility, if both teams planned on restructuring the quarterbacks, which I think is a possibility, you might be able to get an equal restructure. So, in other words, the Rams would restructure Goff, and the Lions would do the same on their end. I'd have to actually sit down and see how those numbers could work out because of the dead money that's involved with it. But there might be some ways to try to manipulate stuff. Actually, they couldn't do that. That wouldn't work either because of the pre-June 1. But there might be some ways that they can manipulate the numbers to be able to work with that to see. But anyway, that's just why we're holding off. But yeah, Stafford was going to count 33, 26, and 3. And they're going to bring in Jared Goff, who's going to count 28.15, 26.15, and zero if they cut him the next year. So they lose 11.3, but they really lose a lot in the short term. For this year in particular, because they're going to carry $19 million dead for Matthew Stafford, plus they're going to bring in the 28.15 for Jared Goff. Now, again, I think they will do something similar where they're going to restructure that deal to create cap relief. This way they can go out there in free agency and, you know, they could do something. I'm just seeing something here. I got nothing important. I think for the Lions, then you start to get into these questions about why they did the trade. And when looking at the numbers and seeing that they're losing cap space short term, spending more money, or losing cap space long term, and spending more money long term as well, because Jared Goff's contract is guaranteed for 2021 and it's basically guaranteed for 2022. So you're locking yourself into him. Really, the only thing I can come away with is, unless the Rams are going to pick up some salary here, which it doesn't sound like they are, then the bottom line is the Lions think Jared Goff is a good quarterback. I don't know if I would argue with that, that he's an okay quarterback. I think, again, you get him out of the situation he's in. You go to a market now where there's no expectations. you have a team with a coach talking about eating people's knees. Expectations are going to be low for next year. Let's put it that way. So he has an opportunity to kind of fade a little bit into obscurity and try to revitalize his career and get back to playing how he did a couple of years ago, where he was a much more high percentage guy and seemed to take more chances. Now, you get into this thing, and this is where I didn't understand, and I guess this is because of how negative people are on Goff right now. They're starting to say, well, why did the Lions take this? Why did they take this awful contract? Now, Jared Goff is not Brock Osweiler. Brock Osweiler was a bad football player. Jared Goff isn't a bad football player. Yeah, it's a guy who's been to a couple Pro Bowls. He was in a Super Bowl a couple of years ago. He was a good enough quarterback to get a $30 million contract or $34 million contract, whatever it was. Again, falls in the same category of not a bum. You know, not someone that's going to lift an organization. But I think what you saw with him is that he was able, when you had a good team, to be able to at least get to that, you know, kind of second level of the playoffs, and they were able to get to the Super Bowl that one year. That's not much different than Matt Stafford. I don't think it is, at least. You know, it's a new can of paint, right? That's really all this is in a lot of ways. It's just that in Stafford, I think you have confidence in his ability, and in Goff played like he didn't necessarily have confidence in his ability with some of the stuff that he was doing. You know, overthinking, maybe that's the way to put it. And that was forcing errant throws and everything else. And there's no guarantee you get fixed from that. You know, you may end up being even worse, as you go to a team that does have a lot less talent. But I think they make this move because they like him as a quarterback. Because if they look at this, if you don't look at this as a 2-year with Jared Goff, if you look at this as a 4-year with Jared Goff, well, that's pretty good because you have a lot of cost control in your quarterback. Now, I should say, where we talk about them losing $11.3 million, it's probably a little bit less than that because they weren't going to have a quarterback on the roster this year. So Chase Daniel might still be on the team. I'm not even sure, but he wasn't going to start. Let's put it that way. My expectation was someone like Tyrod Taylor was going to come in and probably be the quarterback this year. So you figure Tyrod Taylor over a 2-year period probably would have cost them $10, $11 million. So in that respect, maybe you can say they're looking at this and saying, this maybe isn't as bad. You know, we would have had the 19 dead. Let's just run these numbers here. You would have had the 19 dead plus, say, 11 or 12 million for Tyrod Taylor. So you would have been spending 31, I guess, on the position, you know, instead of whatever you're doing now. 54, I guess it was, is what you're doing. So, I mean, that would have been your other option that you would have done. So I'm sure they look at that and they say, well, you know, that's kind of part of the equation as well. You're not taking on that cost of that extra quarterback that you would have had to bring in when you start offsetting the cap numbers and everything else. But I think the bottom line is they like Jared Goff. And Jared Goff, like I've said before, his contract is tradable in the sense that for a team acquiring Jared Goff, it's an average annual value of about, you know, $27 million or so a year, 27, 28, something like that. Probably about $27 million a year. You know, that's pretty affordable for a quarterback of any level. You know, Teddy Bridgewater went for 23 last year, 21. So there's no harm in these numbers. But I think your expectation now is that you've bought yourself into a starting quarterback for free. Because I think you were going to get first-round picks anyway. Now, people have brought up other offers that were on the table. And people, I think, have said that the 49ers had an offer and the Washington had an offer and some of these other teams, I guess, had offers. Maybe the Colts had an offer on the table. And I guess the Patriots did, and Stafford said, no, he's not going to the Patriots. Shows you what they all think of Patricia. I think that... You know, people get so caught up sometimes in these first round picks. Let's just take a look at the Detroit Lions. Let's look at the Lions and let's look at where they are as a roster. All right. They're really nowhere. They have no wide receivers under contract. Galladay is a free agent. Jones is a free agent. Amendola is a free agent. Everybody's a free agent. They have a let me look up their depth chart here. Let me just look up. There's not much to like about the team. You know, as far as jobs go, you know, I kind of said that I thought this was the worst job in the NFL of the jobs that were open because of everything that's here. So, yeah, so of their leading receivers here, they're all out. You have DeAndre Swift on the team. Hockenson is a pretty decent tight end. Decker's an okay tackle. Okay center. And you overpaid for a right tackle who was hurt. Everson Griffin you traded for, that was a waste. Trey Flowers has been kind of eh. Your interior linemen kind of stink. You know, you don't have much, you know, in the middle. You paid a lot of money for Jamie Collins because he was a Patriot. Now you probably don't want him. Harmon's a free agent. You know, you're hoping your cornerback is healthy and plays pretty well. Drew Font, I don't think he's played. No, it's not a good team. I mean, it's a bad football team. This is not a situation that you win now. If you take an approach, you see, this is what's crazy. So you have all these people going crazy about this. Lions are getting two first-round picks that are in the future, and you know, you discount them. From the Rams' perspective, yeah, you discount all that stuff. When you're a team this bad, you have to ask yourself, is the number 21 pick from the Colts going to help you long term? Is the number 19 pick from the Washington football team going to help you long term? You know, is the San Francisco 49ers, where they pick 18? Is that going to help you long term? I think the answer is no, because you're not one player away. You're lots of players away. And there's a lot more value when you're a team that's in a true rebuild. There's a lot more value in getting stuff in the future. You know, it's like the concept that you saw in Miami when Miami kind of tanked that one season. When people are calling on the Jets to lose, when people are watching Jacksonville dismantle on a team and calling on them to lose. That's all about punting on this season to get to the next offseason. So how is that any different here for them to punt on this draft because it's only going to be a pick that's around number 20 versus looking forward to the future and hoping that they can get something better? So I think from the Lions' perspective, that's what this is. That this is essentially the same concept of the tank for Trevor or the suck for Luck or whatever it is campaign where you're throwing away a season to do something. But they're just doing it in a little bit of a different manner. And I like that strategy. I like what they're doing. Because, again, this year, you know, this year on top of that, you've got all this pandemic stuff. So you have a totally different scouting perspective this year than you would have in a normal year. So that's another thing as well, that you might punt on some of these draft picks this year. They're going to be a lot less valuable because of all the COVID stuff that's impacting the way that you can look at these players. But what I would look at if I'm Detroit is I'm looking at this and I'm saying, okay, well, you know what? I can take the number 20 pick this year and, you know, be locked into it and get whatever I'm going to get at number 20. You know, I'll get myself a wide receiver or, you know, another offensive lineman or whatever it may be. I'll get somebody and everyone will say, yay, they got immediate help. And then I'll finish 3-13 and everyone will complain. And, you know, I'm off to a terrible start. But, you know, your other option here is you look at this and you say, okay, well, I can get pick number 20, or I've got one shot, and I got a first shot here that I can get, you know, picks better than this. You know, there's 19 picks better than number 20, right? There's only 12 picks that are worse. So there's probably a much better chance that I wind up with a better pick next year. When I have a chance to fully scout, when I have a chance to self-scout my team, You know, I'm a new general manager just coming into this position. I'm a new head coach coming into this position. I'm a new offensive coordinator coming into the position. I'm a new defensive coordinator coming onto the team. It's all new. You have a chance to self-scout your whole organization, and then you go into the draft next year, and you might get a pick better than 20. Okay, well, the Rams are really good, all right? Let's say the Rams are really good. Well, you still have one more shot to, again, get yourself a better pick than the number 20. Or 21 or 19 or whatever it is, and only a limited chance to get worse. And you know what? You've seen Matt Stafford firsthand, and you've seen all those things I've talked about, all the losing seasons. So if you look at this as, you know, this is kind of a lateral move for us, you know, with just the quarterback exchange is a lateral move. Well, this probably gives you the opinion that, you know what, we should be valuing these first-round picks as probably number 11, 12, 13, whatever it is. So there's a lot of value in that. You know, and even if they, let's say they didn't want to stick with Goff, they still have the 7 pick. This gives them ammunition if they wanted to. Let's just say for argument's sake, they wanted to jump up to 2 with the Jets or jump up to 3 with the Dolphins. This gives you the ammunition to do it. Right, these extra first round picks, excuse me, they give you the juice to do that. Let's say next year they want to jump up and get a quarterback because this does blow up in their face. That extra first round pick that they have the following year gives them an opportunity to jump up. You know, nobody thought the Miami Dolphins were going to get the number 3 pick in the draft when they made that trade for Tunsil. That was expected to be a pick in the 20s. Now, that's the exception to the rule. You know, more often than not, like when the Jets made that trade with Seattle, my concept of valuing that trade was you would basically look at the Seattle pick this year as probably like the 25th pick. I think it ended up as 23. And then I would look at the future one and say, you know, the future's pretty uncertain. I would probably just value that as like a 16, you know, mid-round of the draft, because anything can kind of happen. So I like that for the Lions. I think this gives the Lions a lot of opportunities to either be able to jump up to get a player if they need to, gives them a lot of opportunities to add more players when they have a better chance to work people out, when they have a better chance to go over the organization. And if they really do like Jared Goff and they can get at least quality starting seasons out of him, they can at least go out there with these draft picks that they're going to have, their own top picks, the Rams' top picks, and Jared Goff on that team, and they can at least be respectable. I'm not saying they're going to be good. I'm not saying they're going to be great, but they can at least be respectable. You know, they can get themselves 6 wins, 7 wins. I don't know if this changes now the way things are going to go with Kenny Golladay. My thought was they were going to tag and trade him. Now I'm thinking maybe you try to bring him back. I think Jones is the better fit. He's a lot older, but maybe try to bring Jones back. You know, bring some guys in there that can help you compete, because you don't necessarily have to tank for quarterback now if you believe Goff is your guy, and you've got the ammunition to jump up in the event things do go south and you do tank because your guy's no good. So I kind of like it for the Lions the more I think about it. I do think there's risk in putting kind of, I don't know, putting this all on Goff here. But, you know, I kind of like the trade, I think, in hindsight for him. I think for both sides, this is a good trade. You know, I think it does the things that the teams are trying to accomplish based on the positions that they're at right now. You have one team that's desperately trying to win now. This is the best opportunity they think they can do they can have to do it. And you have another team that doesn't think they can win now. But, you know, this is their best chance to probably fast track for success. So, you know, I think it's a good trade for both sides kind of here. I think obviously there's risk on both ends. Where is there more risk? There's more financial risk with the Lions, because they're going to be paying for all these picks, and they're going to be, you know, paying for the quarterback for the next 2 years for certain. I think there's less financial risk now for the Rams, because the Rams are also clearing cap space by not having those picks on their team in the future. But the risk there is, if it is just a lateral move, you gave up a lot of talent for a lateral move. A lot of talent for a lateral move. So that's kind of the risk that's there. So there's risks, but I kind of like it for both sides. I think it's pretty good. You know, it reminds me of The stuff Vijay and I talked about when we did the book, you know, a couple of years ago. I don't know. I don't even remember when we wrote it a long time ago. I don't know. We released it 2016 maybe. And we had a whole thing on there just on NFL trades and kind of how uncommon they were. But, you know, the thought that we had on it was that trades would increase and that we would see them increase in frequency during the seasons, and we would see them increase in frequency for certain types of players. Because the thought was, as you got younger and younger general managers, and you got people that were not so much football end oriented all the time, but kind of had a bigger picture concept of stuff and, you know, looked at different things and looked at different angles of stuff. You know, they would look at this and say, you know, kind of the if you want to say the analytics, you know, they tell us that we probably should be making these trades, that it makes more sense than necessarily standing pat. And, you know, in some of the research that I've done, I think one of the next things that we really do need to see is really more in-season trades. This was a little thing that was on Twitter. I don't remember who said it. Maybe it was Eric Eager from PFF. I'm not sure. But, you know, basically it was that, you know, sometimes when we make trades for players, this was in reference to Jacksonville, you know, or we re-sign a quarterback or whatever it is, we have this like, well, you know, we were so close last year, we've got to do it, you know, this year to get us over the hump. And what you realize in the NFL is that most of the time, there's no hump really to go over. Last year was your opportunity. You know, you happen, whatever it was, all the stars aligned and you had that season. You know, the ball bounced your way, those couple of fumbles. The other team dropped the interceptions. You caught every interception that came your way. You picked up every fumble that came your way. Your defense scored points. Your special team scored points. Everything worked out, except you just fell a little bit short. And with a lot of those teams, they will go into the next year and they'll move hell or high water to add players. The Chicago Bears, for example, they fall into that kind of category of the way that they approach things. And, you know, the thing that I mentioned in that, which is, I think, true, is a lot of those teams in the playoffs, the thing that annoys me the most with it is at the end of the game, the announcers do this, and we see everybody do it on Twitter as well, fans, not fans, people, whatever. You know, the statement comes back and says, well, you know, you got a great young team there. They'll be back. This is just the beginning. For most of the teams, it's the end. It really is. Now, for the Buffalo Bills, I think it's probably the beginning. I think that team it holds true for because of the way the organization is run, and I think the quarterback position that they seem to have set there. But for a majority of teams, it's not. It's the end game. Your end game was that. Your end game was Case Keenum in the championship game. That was your end game. It doesn't get better than that. There's nothing you can do to make it better. Kirk Cousins doesn't make it better. He doesn't make it happen again. You know, and I think too often that happens. But I think what more teams need to realize is when you are having one of these seasons that you go, wow, how in the world are we 6-1? You know, how did that happen? That's when you got to start hammering home that those trades. And it's one of the reasons why I wish that teams would extend that trade deadline even further, because I think that you would get a lot more action. And the NFL loves that. The NFL loves to steal headlines, grab headlines. Because basically what you're doing when you do these in-season trades that I'm kind of proposing here, you're taking players with expiring contracts or people who are going to be, you know, like top picks that are going to be a contract demand kind of stuff the next year, like a Jamal Adams was, to where you just say, you know, screw it. We're not going to deal with it because we don't want to deal with doing that stuff. So you trade the players away. But it makes so much more sense to trade in season than, you know, trade for those players in the offseason when you don't know anything. You know, just bringing up the Jamal Adams one. If you're the Seattle Seahawks, seeing the way the season went, would you have made the trade for Jamal Adams in the middle of the year? I don't know. I don't think you would have. Maybe because the defense started out so poorly. But I think you would have thought that you could just outslug opponents to win. You know, so I think that that's kind of the next evolution of where we go with trades. I know Bill Barnwell suggested, you know, that this should end these quarterback extensions. It's never going to end the quarterback extensions, because what happens with the quarterback extensions, like for these players, the Staffords and the Goffs and the Wentzes and all these kind of mid-grade players, if you don't extend them, you end up in the Washington Kirk Cousins situation. And Washington got killed by the fan base, by the media, by everybody for their handling of the Kirk Cousins situation. But that's the way that would play out if you don't extend those players. So then Bill did clarify to me, I think what he was talking about afterwards was that you trade the players away. And I've spoken about that before too. Yeah, I agree with that. But that's requiring you to be willing to spend more draft capital on your position when you have a starting quarterback under contract. And teams have not been willing to do that either. Because that would require the Rams, who just gave up all those picks for a player like a Jared Goff in 2016, to probably go out there in 2018 and draft another quarterback. You know, or in 2019, have drafted a quarterback. Probably after 2018. And then you can go down this route of saying, all right, we've got another quarterback we can evaluate, trade the old one, shuffle in the new one. But, you know, it's very difficult to just take those quarterbacks and say, well, we're just going to play the franchise tag game and then let you walk. Or, you know, to let those players, like a Jared Goff, for example, let's say they did go and trade him in 2019 rather than doing the contract or whenever time frame was on all that stuff, you know, go to trade him, and then your option is Ryan Fitzpatrick. Now, Ryan Fitzpatrick is fun. He's exciting, you know, all that stuff. That's a hard path to take as well, because you're giving away a young asset that at the very least is going to keep you relevant for probably 4 years or 5 years. You know, and you're replacing him with a body that maybe gets you some exciting games for a season. And then that's it. There's no long term with it. So it's like, if you want to do those things, and I'm on board with it, I think it's the way to go. You've got a draft completely different than NFL teams draft right now. And you have to be willing to deal with the fallout that the Packers dealt with this year with Jordan Love. You got to be willing to deal with the fallout that happens anytime you see a veteran quarterback have a little bit of a competition come in through the draft. You have to deal with all of that. And, you know, that's hard. It's almost like you put yourself into crisis mode. Now, once teams begin to do it, I think it becomes easier, because then it becomes kind of common. But for the time being, it's not common. And, you know, it just kind of becomes a mess. And I guess that brings us to the other quarterback stuff. Aaron Rodgers being the main one. So, you know, they lose in the championship game. And Rodgers, clearly speaking out of frustration, is just, you know, kind of upset about things. Basically puts his future in doubt with the Green Bay Packers. Doesn't demand a trade, but obviously people reading through the lines are like, you know, he's kind of saying maybe he's going to be traded. Then you've got Florio, I think it was, put it out there that, you know, he deserves a new contract. I mean, come on, that's never been his thing. You know, Rodgers has always played for money. Has never been a thing for Aaron Rodgers. Let's put it that way. He has always been underpaid his entire career. Now, maybe is it possible that he's at that breaking point where now he's like, well, you know, why didn't I get better contracts my whole career when you guys didn't put the players around me? That's possible, because that's what happened when you had the Brady breakup with the Patriots. You know, you get ready to have that breakup with the organization and you just kind of get unhappy about it. And you start, all those things kind of come out. But I think that was just the frustration. It was the frustration of the Packers not allowing him to have that one last chance to throw a touchdown. It's about the frustration of Love being picked. It's about the frustration of not knowing what your future necessarily is with the organization, that you have no control over it. And it just all comes out at once, because you're kind of emotional, you're upset about it, and you want some clarity on it. Now, if he does really want a new contract and it's not about the money stuff, you know, it's about not losing eventually your role as a starter. And, you know, of course, some people, you put that out there like, you're a moron, he's the starting quarterback of the Packers. Of course he's the starting quarterback of the Packers next year. Packers aren't going to want to move him. You know, they just signed the left tackle for $1 billion. They're going to re-sign their wide receiver for $1 billion. You want 1 year of those guys with Aaron Rodgers. You don't want the first year of those guys with Jordan Love. You want them with Aaron Rodgers to have one more shot at this. And then you see where things go after that. But the point is that if he does get some type of contract extension, he puts Jordan Love completely in the rearview mirror. You know, there's no possibility of being replaced at any point in time. You know, what that means to me is that imagine you have a season next year, and let's say that Aaron Rodgers gets hurt in the preseason, you know, the ankle injury, you know, nothing too severe, but something that's going to make him miss 4 or 5 games, and your team goes, you know, 1-4, 0-5, 0-4, 1-3, something like that. Well, you're off to a pretty bad start. Now Rodgers got to come in and salvage the season. But there comes a point where, let's say at the 10-game mark, he hasn't been able to get him to 5-5. You know, something like that. Which, if you're starting from 1-4, you know, that might be a lot to get to, to 5-5. You know, you might be asking a lot. If you don't get there, then you may have a situation where the Packers do say, well, you know, it is time to evaluate for the future. You know, we need to protect Aaron from getting hurt so we can trade him next year. And, you know, it's time to evaluate for the future. And players like that, you don't want to spend time sitting on your bench while your team evaluates the future. So, you know, that's the kind of stuff that the contract would protect from. But it's not a money thing. You know, he's only paid as much as Jared Goff. I mean, contracts don't work that way. You should know better than that. People should know better than that. You know, I get that the stuff comes through a couple of select reporters, but yeah, you should just know better than that. That's not the way that works at all. I don't believe he'll be traded. I think they just have to, you know, he'll get over it. You know, and I think they just have to do a little bit of damage control with him and explain the situation to him for next year and what the hope is and what the logic is on it. Then the other thing is Deshaun Watson. You know, they hire a coach. Deshaun Watson, before they can even get the news out about the coach, basically comes out with another statement and says, trade me, trade me, trade me. Takes the Texans stuff out of his social media. The social media stuff is funny. I mean, that's kind of become the big thing. You know, the strength of these holdouts has really shifted to the players. And I shouldn't call it a holdout just yet, but it's really shifted to the players, these disputes, from where it used to be in the past. And I think that's because of the consolidation of a lot of the media stuff now, to where in the past, you know, you basically used to have to go through your local beat guys. You know, your news on the team came, you know, in my area, you know, it was going to come through, depending on where you live, the Star Ledger, the Daily News, the Post. That's really where it came from. You know, you got some stuff from ESPN, and ESPN had some reporters that would, you know, break some bigger stories and stuff like that. But it really came through the beat guys. And, you know, you could drum up some stuff through there. You know, you could drum up some sympathy through the beat reporters, you know, for the players' plight and by doing things. But as the NFL Network advanced and ESPN advanced, the whole system really changed. You know, I would say really the big breakthrough, and I know ESPN has had a lot of guys, but the big breakthrough was Schefter going, I think, from, I guess it was NFL Network to there, because Schefter became like a big time story breaker, and he scooped everybody. He scooped all the local beat guys on everything. And he became pretty much the most important figure, I think, in the NFL. Now, NFL Network has grown significantly since then as well. You know, and a lot of that has been the Twitter stuff that's on here. We'll post all the news on Twitter. But, you know, you do have a lot of power, I guess you'll call it. You know, the power of the pen or the power of the voice, the power of the social media typing, whatever it is, that comes through, you know, Ian Rappaport and Mike Garofolo and Tom Pelissero. And then you've also got Mike Florio, completely independent platform that has also built like a real nice little ecosystem that's there to break stuff. And to get certain things that are there. His stuff is sometimes a little more salacious, but you know, he gets a lot of dispute stuff too. And so now you've only got to work with a couple of guys, and you can work with them on so many things that you'll pretty much get stuff out there when you want it out there and said the way that you want it. Not that anything on it is dishonest or necessarily wrong. I'll disagree with some of the takes, but slanted maybe is the one word. You know, it's going to come out the way that you want it to come out most of the time. And you know, it's really changed the game, because it makes it much easier to get something out to a national audience, and you create a national story. And it goes beyond just the story playing out in Houston. It goes on to every reporter talking about it, every fan talking about it, people dreaming about getting the player on their team. This stuff didn't happen in the past. It really didn't. It's been something that's grown over the last 10 years or so. But in the last couple of years, it's really, really, really gotten big. And we've seen the power of it. And it's led to teams really being forced, I think, in some cases, to change plans around because of feedback that's coming and stories and leaks and everything else that are coming from outside of the team. Houston, according to McLean today, I think is looking for 2 first-round picks, 2 second-round picks, 2 defensive starters in order to trade Deshaun Watson. That's kind of along the lines of the packages that I thought. It's a little higher, but not much. You know, I thought it would take 3 first-round picks, maybe something else thrown in. I've talked about Quinnen Williams as maybe part of a trade. It sounds like that's what it would be for what they're looking for. I don't think that trade will happen, but I don't think you can completely discount it at this point because of how much pressure is coming from Houston, is coming from outside of Houston. I don't know if that's going to wreck a relationship with an agent. It might, but he's got to do what Watson would like to do. Houston has handled it terribly. They haven't gotten through with that at all. But, it's that concept, I think, of, bringing a young player or two back. And, I think that you strongly consider that if you're the Jets, if you're the Dolphins. The other teams, I think, are too far out. And maybe that's where that trade talk comes in from, to where you're not talking about that 3rd first-round pick, which really is only going to come from teams like the Jets and the Dolphins, or the Jaguars, if they were interested. The fact that you're talking about 2 seconds instead of 3 ones, that tells me that maybe they are open to doing deals with different teams. If the 49ers, for example, were going to have Bosa in a trade, Bosa 2 ones and 2 twos, and that you could maybe make that work. I don't think the Patriots have the young talent to do something like that, but I could see that as maybe being something that'll happen. I don't think this trade has any bearing on that. People have said that this should increase the price. To me, this was just a market price with a Goff throw-in that might benefit the Lions a lot. But for the Lions to do trade, it was just they needed to take Goff anyway because there was no way that the Rams could try to work Goff to another team to keep things quiet. I think it sets a price somewhat for Wentz. It kind of sets a little bit of a stage for, a type of trade maybe that would exist out there for Wentz. Wentz, I think, was far worse than Goff. But you might, say that there's something that could be there, in that type of trade. Anyone else that's really on the market that's notable? I don't think anything where there's really any news, that comes out about it. It takes some of the teams off the list. I'm sure that the Eagles have to be happy if for some reason they're still shopping Wentz, that the Colts are definitely still in the mix. If I'm the Jets, I'm thrilled that the Colts could still be in the mix for Sam Darnold, who I just don't know why you really want to bring him back if you're, if you can make a trade for a veteran quarterback. So, I think that's kind of where things stand right now with it. But it's an interesting trade that we have here because of the Goff aspect and the financial aspect of it. But I don't know. It to me, this does not ring like the Brock Osweiler trade. This was not I'm giving you 2 first-round picks to take my bad contract so I can take on your bad contract guy. Not a bad contract, but the guy that doesn't want to play for you anymore. I mean, come on. That's not what this is. If that was the case, they would have gotten 2 ones and you would have, taken Jared Goff back. And you would have given him a conditional 7th, to make the trade happen. So anyway, that was it for me this week. I got to get back to doing some other work over here. So hopefully I'll be back next weekend. We'll see. But if not, if for some reason I'm late on that, enjoy the Super Bowl, everyone. I think that this will be a pretty big Chiefs win. But I've been wrong all playoffs long, so that probably bodes well for Tampa Bay Buccaneers fans. So enjoy it, everyone. I'll talk to you again soon.